One of the first ways to start is to start by educating yourself. So there are many anti-racism resources and books. There's also the NIH Workforce Diversity Report, as well as just day-to-day things that one can do, which is being inclusive. And these are simple things like putting your pronouns at the end of any kind of Zoom call.
We sit in a very privileged position. And I would say we're privileged from the standpoint of being in the role of leadership with the journal. And I think that our responsibility really is around using the journal as a vehicle to make change. And I'm totally committed to this. I know the deputy editors are as well. And we're really thinking about not just something in the short term that sort of feels or looks politically correct, but rather what can we change within the journal that will have staying power over time that will make a difference.
That's Dr. Ned Kalin, editor-in-chief of the journal, and Dr. Carolyn Rodriguez, a deputy editor of the journal, reviewing the year we just had and what lies ahead for the American Journal of Psychiatry. I'm Michael Roy, executive editor of the American Journal of Psychiatry, and this is AJP Audio. Dr. Ned Kalin, editor-in-chief of the American Journal of Psychiatry, is the Hedberg Professor and Chair of the Department of Psychiatry at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, where he also serves as the director of the Health Emotions Research Institute and director of the Lane Neuroimaging Laboratory. He's a member of the National Academy of Medicine, a distinguished fellow of the American Psychiatric Association, and serves on the APA Council of Research. His work is aimed to understand the brain mechanisms underlying mental disorders. Dr. Carolyn Rodriguez, a deputy editor of the American Journal of Psychiatry, is an associate professor in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Stanford University, where she is director of the Translational Therapeutics Lab. She also serves as associate chair for inclusion and diversity at Stanford University, and she is a member of the APA Council on Research. In 2019, Dr. Rodriguez was selected as a recipient of the Presidential Early Career Award for Scientists and Engineers, which recognizes outstanding scientists and engineers at the outset of their independent research careers. Her research has looked at finding rapid-acting treatments to relieve the suffering of patients with severe mental illness, including obsessive-compulsive disorder. Dr. Kalin, Dr. Rodriguez, hello, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Michael. It's good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Now, 2020 has been an unpredictable year, to say the least. The novel coronavirus has disrupted nearly every aspect of our lives, and it has affected how many industries do business. The business that we are in, scholarly publishing, has not been immune from this change. We've seen a flood of manuscript submissions across the better part of 2020 on the topic of COVID-19. So first, can you talk about what the journal has done in response to the pandemic?
Yes, I'd be happy to, Michael. All of us are immersed in COVID-19, not only in Madison, Wisconsin, and in the United States, but worldwide. And as we've been very interested in, from the perspective of the journal, in trying to get out to our readership and to the public new information that is relevant to COVID-19 as it relates to mental health issues. As you point out, we have received an innumerable number of manuscripts, and I think this clearly reflects the marked interest and very understandable preoccupation with COVID-19 and how it's influencing mental illness. The journal is quite selective by nature, and so we have really tried to select the manuscripts that we think that would have the most impact for our readership, and as part of that have been able to streamline the process of selecting some of those manuscripts and actually getting them online very rapidly. And if you take a look at our website, you'll see that we have a very special section right up front that's related to COVID-19 with some really interesting and potentially clinically important papers that range all the way from telehealth on an inpatient unit to thinking about the pros and cons of virtual psychotherapy to thinking about populations that may be particularly affected where the interaction between mental health issues and COVID-19 can be absolutely devastating. For example, individuals with substance use disorders, disabled individuals, individuals in communities where there are barriers to getting help or underprivileged communities where the resources aren't there.
To add to that, I mean, it's been really amazing to see how quickly the response has been. Typically, you know, an experience in publishing is that it takes a long time for something to be reviewed and then to be out into the community. And so, you know, Dr. Keelan really, that was one of his visions of trying to get this information out as quickly as possible. And one of the early articles, as he mentioned, was about rapid implementation of telehealth and hospital psychiatry and how hospitals themselves had to turn that around quickly. So you can look up that article on the webpage. Dr. Mark Keelan is the first author of that one. And, you know, in terms of the implementation, I think thoughtful articles like those of Dr. John Markowitz looking at psychotherapy at a distance really describe both the pros and cons of using telemedicine and opportunities and a vision for the way forward. And finally, Dr. Nad Carney, with the article in terms of telehealth during COVID-19, does everyone have equal access, highlights the disparities that have really been highlighted by COVID-19. I don't think any of us would have predicted that this would have continued to go on for as long as it has, thinking about 9 months ago. So, you know, that we were thinking that this would be a rapid response, but it has continued and it has been, a highlight of the journal.
You know, I should also mention to add to that, you know, when we think about the impacts of COVID-19, you know, we're thinking about not only the issues related to providing mental health care directly, but also the impacts of the chronic stress that Carolyn was just mentioning. Clearly, the disparities that are occurring in relation to the impact of stress in communities that have less resources, communities of color, Black individuals as well are affected by this disproportionately if you look at the number of deaths. And also, we know that in addition to the stress, there are direct CNS effects probably of this virus, which are significant, and we're beginning to get reports about that. So as we move forward, we want to keep this front and center from the standpoint of this wide range of issues, all the way from how the brain is affected to how healthcare is delivered, and also want to make sure that what we can do is to facilitate getting good care to populations that are disproportionately affected by this.
Staying with this notion about how the impacts of this pandemic as it keeps going, there have been a number of reports and surveys indicating that the coronavirus will cause a wave of new mental health complications, both for people who already have a mental health condition and also for people who may be feeling especially anxious or depressed. So how can people stay resilient during this time? And how can mental health professionals stay resilient so that they can offer the best possible care for their patients?
There's no question, you know, I think that another epidemic is going to be a mental health epidemic. It's already occurring. You know, and I think in the face of all the stress and right now, and also with the very understandable focus on the virus itself, there may be less emphasis right now on mental health issues. And even some patients or individuals that are experiencing problems may not be seeking help right now. But there's no question that if you look at substance use or other factors, that these are all increasing currently. And there's no doubt that when this is, you know, when we have this under more control and there's a little more time to sit back, we're going to find a lot more people coming to us for help. This is a chronic, ongoing, serious stressor, very complicated, all the way again from a virus affecting someone's brain and body to the psychosocial aspects, to the financial aspects. It goes on and on. And so, you know, it's obviously going to be psychiatry and mental health are going to be front and center in this. And I think it's going to be important that as a field and as a journal, that we become advocates for the patients and for more support for this. You know, there are many things that individuals can do, and maybe Carolyn can make some suggestions about this. But the one thing just to point out is about the hospital care workers themselves and psychiatric workers. You know, we really need to take care of each other and not be shy about that. But Carolyn, what are your thoughts?
Thank you, Ned. I absolutely agree. And, you know, my mind is also on our frontline psychiatrist providers who are, you know, interfacing with patients in the emergency room, on inpatient wards, and also are under the same stress, but also have additional stressor of potentially becoming infected themselves, and what are the consequences for their loved ones. And, you know, I think you hit the nail right on the ahead, which is how do we take care of ourselves during this time? Sometimes it's really hard to do that, right? To put the oxygen mask on yourself before others, but that's really key. And I think simple things like making sure to stay connected to your network and loved one. Sometimes our inclination when we're feeling bad is to kind of retreat. And that's when you most want to get out there and reach out for help. There's a lot of websites. There's a lot of within universities, confidential resources that you reach out to for help. And the other couple pieces of advice, what I say is trying to stay active. There's a number of benefits of just exercise, getting out and walking and being in the outdoors. And also in the spirit of the season of Thanksgiving, practicing gratefulness about, you know, the things that we do have in our lives. And it's been shown that when you practice gratefulness and reach out and do kind acts of kindness for other people, that can actually lift your mood. So we sit in a position of privilege, being able to have internet access, being able to get cutting edge information from each other. But we can't forget that there's a whole segment of the population that doesn't have that. So even contributing to a food pantry is something that can help another person and lift one's own spirits.
Thank you for that perspective. Of course, COVID-19 was not the only noteworthy event of the past year. There were, unfortunately, a number of events in the United States that made us think about racism and social injustice. We've all thought about how we can stop perpetuating elements of structural racism and social injustice, not just in our role as citizens, but in our roles as co-workers and, for some of us, leaders in an organization or field. Our parent organization, the American Psychiatric Association, set up a presidential task force to address structural racism throughout psychiatry under the leadership of Dr. Jeffrey Geller, president of APA. And from your point of view, how have racism and social injustice affected things like mental health care research and mental health care access?
What I would start with is that increasingly we see in the news and the data that is evident out there that COVID-19 disproportionately affects individuals of color. And since reflecting back on the time course of COVID and the issues that that raised and the uncertainty and chronic stress, we also have new issues that we faced after the death of George Floyd in terms of equity and justice. And the context and intersection of these two things has really created, I think, a very positive change in our society, realizing that there's a long road ahead, that the scale of change needed to impact the culture of equity and creating a culture that has creating a more equitable environment is something that's going to require efforts, not just of individuals, but really groups of people, and that we really need to act more directly, getting data, becoming more informed in order to make meaningful change within the context of systemic racism and how it impacts mental health care access. I have to say, sort of on a personal level, as a healthcare provider, it really touches me, you know, on a day-to-day level. Just this last month, I went to the emergency room to see an individual who had suicidal thoughts. And collecting his history, which I've disguised, he had a lot of pain, healthy individual with a lot of pain in his shoulder. And the pain was ignored by his healthcare providers. And the pain eventually ended up leading into a benign abscess that then created the need for a surgery, which then created the need for physical therapy. He was unable to work, unable to provide for his kids, and that caused depression and feeling hopeless in the setting of this pandemic that's leading to him to present to me as a psychiatrist in terms of suicidality. But that disparity sort of, initiated the momentum. And so it's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking as a provider to see those things. And I know that the journal is committed to doing all that we can for our part in terms of educating ourselves and creating a roadmap for meaningful change.
Yeah, let me add a couple things to that, if it's okay, Michael. We are really living in unprecedented times. And I think, as Carolyn has pointed out, the positive, you know, real positive impact that has come out of the Black Lives Matter movement and all of the things that have happened recently in relation to COVID as well and in some ways have brought a social consciousness for many of us in ways that for whatever reason wasn't there before. And I think that within the journal, you know, I've worked with the deputy editors, including Carolyn, who's been extremely instrumental in this, to really think through how we can use the journal to make change and to use it to basically combat anti-racism from the standpoint of the trauma and the horrible impacts that racism has and currently has had and currently has on our society. And as Carolyn pointed out, we sit in a very privileged position. And I would say we're privileged from the standpoint of being in the role of leadership with the journal. And I think that our responsibility really is around using the journal as a vehicle to make change. And I'm totally committed to this. I know the deputy editors are as well. And we're really thinking about not just something in the short term that sort of feels or looks politically correct, but rather what can we change within the journal that will have staying power over time that will make a difference. And so we're in the process now of self-examination. We're in the process of each of us sort of thinking through ourselves about what we can do differently. I personally have been in the process of self-examination from the standpoint of trying to understand how I've contributed to racist issues unintentionally, but I think this is a process that we're all sort of thinking through, and we want to use sort of our own self-examination as a piece of thinking through then how we can make structural changes in the journal. And some of those things are related immediately to making it a priority to have published papers that are focused on healthcare disparities in relation to populations or individuals of color, where the disparities are clearly there, where discrimination has been there in the past. Other issues are related to thinking about how we can be more active in encouraging minorities and minority individuals to submit papers to the journal, how we can mentor individuals, how we can broaden the diversity of not only people that send manuscripts in, but also review manuscripts, and how we can gather information from diverse individuals to help us think through the changes that we want to make in the journal. And so there are a variety of things. Already we have a couple of papers that are on our website. And like with COVID, we've also highlighted this area as being so important that we want papers to be immediately posted on the website. We have a special section. And actually, one of the most exciting papers that we've gotten is one that Carolyn is a co-author on, which is focused around thinking through how we can ensure that academic psychiatry departments are doing what they can do to make a difference and make the changes that they need to make in this area, specifically thinking about leadership roles in relation to positions where we can have a vice chair or someone in a powerful position that will oversee diversity, equity, inclusiveness, and anti-racism efforts. And as you mentioned in your introduction, Carolyn has been very involved with that at Stanford, and I know she's involved with that at a national level as well. So it's really an asset and wonderful to have her as a deputy editor. And as we move forward, you'll see that she's going to be taking more and more of a leadership role in this area for the journal.
So as has been noted, one of the effects that racism has had is that Black and other minority populations have endured unequal healthcare access and outcomes. What can mental health professionals do to acknowledge and start to remedy this, both in their own organizations and in their own research?
Michael, first of all, thank you for asking this question. I think this is the key question. One of the first ways to start is to start by educating yourself. So there are many anti-racism resources and books. If you just Google any kind of bestseller list, you know, it's really heartening to see anti-racism resources on the bestseller list. There's also the NIH Workforce Diversity Report, as well as just, you know, day-to-day things that one can do, which is being inclusive, right? Inviting Black colleagues to participate in grant applications and reviews. The other component, which is very important, is the collection of data, right? To be able to understand the baseline and how best to make an impact. This is a double-edged sword, right? Because when you collect information on ethnicity, gender, and different demographics, able or not, you need to be able to signal the reason why. There's several national initiatives that are around we ask because we care. And so it's important to sort of educate why is the importance of these things and make sure that people are not in a position where they feel like that those metrics are being used in terms of evaluating them. The other piece that one can do is just to signal that you're somebody who is open to inclusion. And these are simple things like putting your pronouns at the end of any kind of Zoom call. This can actually, you know, I've noticed this time and time again, people will ask me, you know, why do you have pronouns there? And what does that mean? And you can really engage in these kinds of conversations. So I think these types of things will ultimately help in terms of the long-term vision and long-term goal, which is creating environments that encourage diverse thinking. And I know Dr. Kaelin is very passionate about this. We need to have as diverse representation as possible on the editorial board and on the deputy editors group, because that's how you really get the best kind of reviews. People bring to the table different kinds of experiences and backgrounds. Resilience, grit are important. People's life stories are important. And at the end of the day, it's about putting the best science out there. And if we have a diverse group, we can accomplish that mission. The other thing to add is that, unfortunately, there is bias in the system. All of us are biased. And how do we take action to recognize that? There was a very impactful report in Science, Ginther et al. In 2011, that showed that Black and Asian investigators are less likely to be awarded an R01 on the first or second attempt, and Black and Hispanics are less likely to resubmit a revised application, and Black investigators that do resubmit have to do so more often to receive an award. And these kind of data is important for us to self-reflect. If this is happening in the grant mechanism, grant is the engine for generation of papers that are then put up for publication. And so if there is, you know, some starting to see some data and some evidence of this, of biases in the system, that will ultimately be transmitted into publication. And so it's also on us to examine not only in the publication, but how it sort of fits into the grander scheme of things.
And Carolyn, you had started to mention things that on our level with the journal we're doing in terms of addressing structural racism and inequities. And you and the other editors of the American Journal of Psychiatry wrote an editor's note that appeared in the September 2020 issue of the journal, where you wrote about the commitment to stand against racism, social injustice, and healthcare inequities. So can you describe what some of the steps are that are being taken to address these issues?
Yes, I'm happy to. I feel very fortunate to have Dr. Kaelin as the editor-in-chief and really work with a group of deputy editors who are committed to change and transparency and just come from a place of really having the intention to drive meaningful change. And the piece that you refer to was part of writing out that commitment. And I know that this is not something that we're in it for the short term. It's something for the long haul. As my colleague at Stanford says, Sharon Williams said, this is a marathon. And we need to recognize that there's people that have been running a marathon for a long time. There's some people who are new to the marathon, you know, and just getting started and just, you know, learning about the marathon and what it is. And then there's some people who are on the sidelines and wondering whether they should participate in the marathon. And we want to include everyone, everybody who is around the marathon, you know, invite them to join the race and to really touch as many of the readership as possible at AJP. To summarize briefly what the article states is, first, a commitment to enhance inclusiveness and diversity in the journal in relation to the editorial board, authorship, and reviewers. Second, to prioritize high-quality papers focused on the history of racism, systemic racism issues, healthcare inequities, mechanisms underlying disease, and new treatment developments that are relevant and specific to the mental health of Black individuals. Third, highlight publications and other initiatives to promote strategies to attract and train Black physicians to become clinical psychiatrists, educators, and researchers. And Ned has already highlighted the rapid mechanism for publishing those papers that are sort of pre-publication on the website. And fourth, you know, having this new section of the journal website underscoring these important topics and rapidly alerting our readership. And then finally, we look forward to working in concert with the APA Presidential Task Force to address structural racism through psychiatry. And they're charged to develop achievable and actionable recommendations for change to eliminate structural racism.
I'd like to turn now to review some of the highlights of 2020. From your point of view as editors of the journal, what were some articles that really stood out to you among the research that was published this past year?
So this year we've had so many wonderful papers. It's really difficult to select one, but at the end of the year we do this kind of articles of impact and import, and we do need to select one. And this year I selected one that was an elegant study by Glacier et al. And the topic is about translational neuroscience and having mitochondrial pathways shed light on therapeutic targets. It captured my attention for a couple of reasons. So first, I definitely love translational neuroscience and therapeutics. And so it highlights a promising pathway for treating schizophrenia and bipolar disorder through a rigorous translational approach. Second, it uses targeted analysis to highlight the severity and nature of these mitochondrial alterations found in both schizophrenia and bipolar, including cell type specificity and how they differ across these diagnoses. And finally, that these analyses were then repeated in a primate model to assess the effect of antipsychotic administration on mitochondrial-related genes. So taken together, I think what's really nice is that it highlights how you can use a translational approach to really distinguish differences amongst disorders and highlight really promising pathways, and in this case, targeting enhancement of synaptic excitation as a novel approach to improve cognitive dysfunction.
Maybe I can add to that a bit. Carolyn is right. It's really difficult to select specific articles because the quality of what we get and the innovative nature of the papers that are published is extremely high. And so each issue, I think, has standout papers. And all the papers are good. I the one that Carolyn talked about is really very interesting. There are a number of others as well. And as Carolyn alluded to in the January issue, the readership will be able to see the editor's picks from each of the editors about one of their favorite papers. For me, one of the papers that I found exciting was the GWAS study that was published from the Million Veterans Program, which highlights the genetic underpinnings of anxiety. This is the largest GWAS study ever, and because of its size, we're being able to look at 200,000 individuals, and that will grow. Genetic leads have been identified, some of which have been replicated, and others of which have been new. And one of the exciting ones is the estrogen receptor gene. And so this is a candidate that we've known for a long time is probably related to anxiety and affective problems, but never really had the genetic information that was sort of the smoking gun. And so it's early, but it's exciting. Another paper that's exciting that I think Elizabeth Binder, one of the deputy editors, is particularly excited about is one looking at levels of pollution in this case, in cities in China, in relation to how many days patients are hospitalized for depression, finding a direct relation between levels of air pollution and depression. And linking, an important current environmental factor to the brain and to symptoms, but also when you think about it, linking that to one of the most important topics facing us, which is our environment and hopefully moving in a greener direction for our world. And one of the cool things that they found in this paper was that the levels of nitrous oxide actually were predictive of individual of this phenomena. So even getting down to the level of which type of pollution. So, that's one of the really exciting things about the journal is that it goes all the way from basic molecules, ideas about treatment, to the environment, to society. It really does represent the breadth of our field, which I think is remarkable.
And I want to move from what we have published to what we may be publishing. Are you seeing any trends in the field of mental health research?
We are seeing lots of trends, but they really run along, I think, traditional lines. And so the trends are around clinical trials for new therapeutics, certainly new trends in relation to neuromodulation strategies. Carolyn herself has been very involved with research in this area, things like transcranial magnetic stimulation and optimizing it and thinking about how to be much smarter about how to personalize treatment responses. Ketamine in the psychedelic area has been an area of high impact and interest. As you know, ketamine is now demonstrated to be a rapidly acting antidepressant, and it looks like it affects a lot of other types of symptoms. One of the exciting papers actually this year was around the use of ketamine for substance use, alcohol use disorder, showing that one injection of ketamine facilitated some of the motivational enhancement therapies that that were tried. So there's that. For sure, our emphasis is going to be on disparity, healthcare disparities, and thinking about how we can better push research agendas in relation to people of color. An example in the study that I just mentioned with the GWAS study was one of the important things in this study was that there were enough individuals of color, African-American descent, that they could actually, the investigators could look at whether there were genetic differences that might be important in thinking about treatment response. And there was one gene that was found that was very rare in the Caucasian population, but fairly common in the Afro-American population. And so really thinking about what can we do to further our understanding of the illnesses as they affect the minority populations and how we can better promote treatments is definitely a theme. And for sure, the COVID-19 theme, a theme will be there as well. So a whole variety of things.
I completely agree with everything you said, Ned, and just jumping off the point with the COVID-19, I think what we're seeing as we understand more about COVID-19 and how it acts is more and more, you know, reports of how it affects the brain. And I think, you know, would really invite pieces that seek to understand the neurobiology, neuroimaging, looking toward the future. There are people who are affected by COVID and then continue to have these long-term sequelae, and how it impacts other outcomes in terms of, we already talked about anxiety, depression, suicidality. We don't know what are the effects of COVID on individuals, and also importantly, how to distinguish it from just the stress of the environment versus the, you know, actually being COVID positive.
And recognizing the effects that this is probably going to have on our inboxes and the submission system, are there any kind of topics that you would like to see more of in the journal?
Well, again, I think we want to highlight the COVID-19 topics that we just talked about. We want to highlight topics that focus in on healthcare disparities in ways that we can better understand the disparities and hopefully ideas about how we can have impactful positive change in relation to disparities, especially as it relates to mental health and mental well-being. We're quite interested also across the board in, you know, the new developments in the field and want to feature the opportunity to rapidly publish clinical trial information as it comes out that is sufficient to sort of support changes in treatment. And we're particularly interested in also blending the clinical science with the more basic science in a way that we can bring our readership up to speed on how we can think at a variety of levels in relation to the patients sitting in front of us and in relation to treatments, all the way from molecules to using animal models, to doing human neuroimaging and clinical trials.
Yeah, I would say if you're doing great science, we want to see it. Anything that you think that would fit for the American Journal, we want to have it in there. We want to feature the best. We also want to feature topics about social justice, anti-racism. The goal is to impact and reach as many people as possible. And so if you're doing great science, it can't hurt to just run it by and see if it could be a fit.
Well said.
And I have one more question regarding future things that the American Journal of Psychiatry might publish, and that's moving from, you know, new research and new research areas to new authors. And the question would be, what advice would you give early career researchers who are aiming to get published or get involved with the journal?
So I have a personal connection to this because the very first mental health piece that I published was a clinical case conference that I did at Columbia. Maria Okendo was a deputy editor, and she said, you know, you gave a great conference. Why don't you consider putting it into the journal? And so, you know, I think that the more that we can do as deputy editors and editorial board members to invite early career researchers to think about pitching to the journal and getting involved in it early, was really a game changer for me. I think it was really exciting that piece that I wrote, which was about, it was a cultural competence topic about both the therapist and the patient having similar cultural identities and how there are pros and cons to that. And then a piece looking at OCD and schizophrenia as kind of schizo-obsessional. And then when you see the impact of people actually like reading it, doing CME credits and like using it as teaching cases, I think it really helps our early career researchers realize early on that they can make an impact through scientific publishing, and hopefully will invite them to join us in the field in terms of doing research or doing education, being involved in the publishing aspects of it. So I guess my advice would be, it can't hurt to ask, right? You know, send emails. And then for those people who are in positions of power or mentors, it can't hurt to invite people, right?
Yeah, I would echo that. I would say, don't be shy. Let us know what you're thinking, what you're interested in. You know, we really do want to publish the best science, but we also want to be inclusive and we want to help people with their careers. And so I think we can do a little extra mentoring at times from the deputy editors. If you get rejected, if you send something in, join the crowd. You know, that's one thing just to keep in mind, that being rejected from the American Journal should not be taken personally by anybody. We only have so much space in the journal and it is pretty competitive, but you may have an idea or a piece of data or a study that would be really cool to have published in the journal. And so it doesn't hurt to ask at all. And if you'd like a little more support or help, it doesn't hurt to ask about that either. And so we would invite younger folks and more junior people to be involved. And also let us know if you'd like to do some reviews, because we always need reviewers. It's a great experience, I think, for more junior people to doing reviews either by themselves or with somebody a little bit more senior. And we'd like to enlist you in that effort.
Indeed, I should probably put in a plug. If they do want to ask us questions or put themselves up as possible reviewers, they can just write to us. Easiest email for this podcast, ajp@psych.org. We'll put that out there. Hopefully we can get some more reviewers and authors we can mentor. And finally, Dr. Kalin, 2021 marks the beginning of your third year at the helm of the journal. So what are you hoping the new year will bring?
The first thing I'm hoping the new year will bring is the vaccinations for COVID-19. In relation to the journal, you know, it has been a privilege, Michael, to be in this role. And I'm particularly privileged to have the deputy editors that I've been working with. I think it's obvious the contributions that Carolyn has been making and her commitment. And Michael, I want to thank you and your staff as well from the standpoint of the support and commitment and involvement that you've had with the journal. I'm excited about the upcoming year. And I think the things that we've been doing have been really positive, and we want to keep working on those themes. You've heard a lot today about some of the content themes, but also, you know, we want to get the highest quality papers possible into the journal. We want to, you know, diversify the journal, as you've heard. We'd like to bring young investigators into the fold as well. You don't have to be an investigator. You can write a clinical report. And we want to follow along the sort of the strategy of trying to have each issue of a journal that's somewhat topically focused and make each issue of the journal a piece that, when it comes out in hardcover, something that could be used as a teaching tool in a particular area for residents or med students or even faculty. And so I think, you know, the theme for this year from my perspective is to keep doing what we're doing, but to do it better and do it as best as we can.
Dr. Kalin and Dr. Rodriguez talking about the year that has passed and what's to come. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you. And Dr. Kalin, just to express our gratitude to have you at the helm. It's really transformed the journal. So many exciting directions. Thank you for your openness and really, really looking forward to 2021.
Thank you, Carolyn. Thank you for that heartfelt comment. It really does make me feel good. And it's wonderful working with you.
This concludes this episode of AJP Audio. You can rate and review the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to it. Please also visit our website, ajp.psychiatryonline.org, to check out trending articles, find CME courses, and watch videos highlighting some of our other articles. APA Publishing has other podcasts you can listen to. Psychiatry Unbound is the books podcast from APA Publishing. It's hosted by Dr. Laura Roberts, editor-in-chief of APA Books. Also check out From Pages to Practice, which reviews the latest research published in the journal Psychiatric Services. It's hosted by Dr. Lisa Dixon, editor-in-chief of the journal, along with Dr. Josh Berezin. You can subscribe to these podcasts on Apple, Google, Spotify, or on any of the popular platforms. Thank you for listening.